What's good? What's good, Mr. Alexander? How are you tonight?
You can hear me, sir?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, this has been one of these weeks and everything else on this actual show on this actual day of December 3rd of 2019. Lots of stuff to end up to get into on this Earl J. Brock show tonight, which I have my special guest here, Mr. Calvin Glenn Alexander, who also end up got his show on there called the CGA Tour. If you ever want to listen to him on the Anchor app. Follow him as you go as please. Follow him on Facebook and everything else that you need to follow the answers to questions that you need. Mr. Alexander, welcome to the show as we speak again.
Thanks, Earl. Thanks for having me again. It's always good to be a part of your show, man.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Yes. So let's get strictly right down to business and everything else as part of off as, you know, the Monday night football game last night between the Minnesota Vikings and the Seattle Seahawks in there, which it was a playoff positioning for the Seattle Seahawks right then and there, which and they are now in as the number two seed team, and they now taking over the lead in the NFC West over past the San Francisco 49ers, despite the 49ers have ended up lost to the Baltimore Ravens, which in that was a Super Bowl preview matchup. I believe, which it was good on both teams. I mean, they both couldn't throw the ball as the way that they wanted to that Sunday's game right then and there. But at the same time, if you end up look at it from it was a great game from both sides between the Niners and the Ravens. That was a phenomenal game and everything else. What was your thought when you NLC and everything else from Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, do you think that he got the MVP consideration in the bag from the way you saw his performance?
You know, he plays against the Niners, and a couple quick stats for you here. The Niners still have like the 30th strength of schedule in the league. So I'm not trying to say the Niners are bad necessarily, but I'm trying to take away a little bit of credit that they have. Just because the teams they played so far, just they, you know, they've lost to the Seahawks, right? And then, you know, the Niners look really, really good, but like they beat the Redskins by 9. And I know that game was sloppy and wet, miserable, all type of stuff. But to me, at least, the Niners and the Patriots look very similar in the fact that their defenses are really, really good. No question about that. But their offenses are kind of iffy. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that I think Lamar Jackson is amazing. I think he's great. But I think the MVP consideration right now in my mind is split, especially after this Monday night football game here, is split 50-50 between, you know, Russell Wilson and, you know, Lamar Jackson. A lot of credit in my mind goes to Lamar Jackson for upping his game this year, for being way, way better in his second year in the NFL, and for Jim Harbaugh, for him, or excuse me, John Harbaugh, for planning the whole offense around him and making schemes work and all type of stuff. But at least in my mind, if you want like that one guy on your team who can play any offensive scheme, right? If Russell Wilson all of a sudden plays for the Dallas Cowboys tomorrow, if he plays for the England Patriots tomorrow, if he plays for the Saints, or if even he goes and plays for the Dolphins or Bengals tomorrow, I would take Russell Wilson over Lamar Jackson tomorrow. Now, I'm not saying I would take him for the rest of their careers. I'm not saying I'd take him for, you know, the next 2 years, whatever it is, but I would definitely take Wilson for like the next game if they're both up. I have more trust right now in Wilson because Lamar Jackson looks unbelievably good, but it's hard for me to decipher if he's unbelievably good because he's on this team and it fits him so well, or if it's because he just really is flat out this good. I mean, that game they had on Sunday against the Niners, and just kind of throwing it back to you, Earl.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that neither team was able to pass the ball really well because of the weather, or because both of the defenses are so good?
Well, to be honest with you on that, To be honest with you on that, Calvin, I'm gonna say both. And the real
Okay. Yeah.
reason I say is both because what you know, I've been saying about Jimmy Garoppolo, I said the whole entire season, I said Jimmy Garoppolo is a question mark for San Francisco because right then and there, and I've been saying this for over the whole entire year, that Jimmy Garoppolo is a question mark. Your running game between Matt Breida and Morse, which Morse ended up having a monster game, which he had about, I think he had about 16, 17 carries for over about 145 or 165 and about at least a touchdown or two in that game against the Baltimore Ravens defense. It was kind of ridiculously preciously hard to throw the ball in that type of inclement weather. Not like the inclement weather, like the way that the Packers and the Giants end up play that
Yeah.
other stuff. And plus, I also end up kind of talk about is Tom, and that's another question I'm going to ask when we get done with this part here as we speak. So, in my contentions right then and there, everybody end up precisely end up said that that was a Super Bowl preview between these two. The last time that the 49ers and the Ravens played against each other was 7 years ago in that Super Bowl. That was the time when Ray Lewis officially retired him and Ed Reed, which in those two was out as the best middle linebacker and the best corner or free safety, strong safety, whatever position Ed Reed played in. So that was my thing there. It was both sides, the way I see it. I never thought that Lamar Jackson was and it was going to be juking the 49ers defenders this way and that way. And the way I was looking at it, I was just like, OMG. I never thought I'd seen Lamar Jackson would be this very good and this very talented. And they end up having the number one rushing attack because of him. He's the type of person that knows how to keep the team together. Did you see how he ended up? Rams shocked them on the LA Rams in that game last Monday night in a 45-6.
That
Five
game
TD.
was incredible.
That was like he was a human video game.
Yeah.
He was a human video game, and I watched that and I was just like, I watched it after three quarters. I was just like, I can't watch this no more. This was a total domination. I felt that Lamar Jackson handily beat the LA Rams by himself. And I understand Mark Ingram got him about 15 carries or about 115, 120 for about a good buck 20 in that game. And he also backed it up when he had another 100-yard game against the 49ers. So if you think about this right now, as which and I will end up asking you, who would you want to see as your number one seed in the AFC, who's your number ones and twos in the AFC and in the NFC side of everything else? Because right now, the Baltimore Ravens has taken over the number one seed for right now, if the playoffs ever would have started between the two. And that would be the case, which we're going to end up have to bring that up here, which we have Calvin Glenn Alexander right here on the Anchor app, on Anchor FM. Sponsored by Anchor, the fastest way to end up to make a podcast here. So transitioning, which and I want to end up transitioning over to the college football level right then and there, which and we have some conference championship games, which and we got Utah against number six on Utah going against Oregon against the Oregon Ducks. Then you got the SEC championship game between number one LSU. Well, I believe they should be number one after this week, after today, because they was number two, because Ohio State was number one. So you got LSU and Georgia. Then you got Ohio State against Wisconsin. And then you got the Big 12 championship game between Oklahoma and Baylor. Now, mind you, the rankings is already is up there. You might as well say it's Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, and Georgia. Out of one of those games is right then and there, who you feel should be at the fourth spot? Do you actually feel comfortable at the positioning where the college ranking is standing at, according to the college football committees?
So, I don't necessarily, and the big reason is that in my mind, college football rankings need to decide what, you know, like what matters more. And if it changes year to year, that's totally fine. Every year in college football is different. But do losses matter more or do wins matter more for ranked teams? We've got number four, Georgia. They have by far and away the worst loss out of basically between them, OU, Baylor, for that matter. But between Baylor, OU, Georgia, and Utah, Georgia has the worst loss. They've lost to South Carolina, who is not going to a bowl game this year, and just got killed by Clemson this weekend. So, in my mind, Georgia should not be the fourth spot. I understand they've beaten good teams. I understand they're in the SEC. But in my mind, either it is the quality of wins that you have in a season, or it is who has the, I guess, the least of the worst losses, or however you want to put it, who has the less bad loss. You know, in my mind, OU does not, I mean, OU lost to K-State, who they definitely shouldn't have, and K-State, I think, barely is going to hit a bowl game this year. That's not a good loss at all. Utah lost to, you know, USC at USC, still not a good loss. And
right,
you know, Oregon, I guess, is lost too at this point. So I'm going to throw them out of here. And Baylor's one loss is to OU, who they're going to play this weekend. So in my mind, and Baylor has the less of the worst losses so far, you know, and, but you're still not going to rank Baylor ahead of OU. And I understand that. So in my mind here, what I would say is that you may know, Earl, I went to Oklahoma State University. I'm going to leave my bias right there. I'm a Big 12 fanatic. I believe the Big 12 doesn't get as much credit as they deserve, yada, yada. If you want to listen to more about my Big 12 takes, feel free to listen to my podcast. I'll go on a rant for years about it. But my point here is that that South Carolina loss is bad. It's just inexcusable. It's bad. Georgia shouldn't have lost to them, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And you should have, in right now, if the committee is looking at itself in the mirror, either Utah or OU should be in that fourth spot. Now, me as a Big 12 fan, I would have OU in that spot because OU's one loss this year is to a ranked K-State. OU has beaten, I think, three or four ranked teams this year at Baylor, at Oklahoma State, who, unfortunately, that's my alma mater, it happened this week, and I was there to see, but OU did beat us. We were ranked. We're still ranked today. We're now, we're the last spot. We're 25th. But, you know, OU has really good wins is what I'm saying.
Right.
Utah, I don't know what their good wins are. I don't know what to tell you. They've beaten an Arizona State team that at one point was ranked. And besides that, the Pac-12 just doesn't have any ranked teams. And they've lost to the other team they played this year that's been ranked in USC. Granted, at USC. So, in my mind, I would have OU at the fourth spot today, right now. I wouldn't be caring about, oh, Georgia's definitely going to drop to, you know, whatever, probably closer to Oregon or Auburn or Florida or whoever, because they're going to have two losses, I would assume, at least, after this weekend, if LSU wins like they should. Then that'll, you know, that should fix itself. But in my mind right now, it's still not where it should be. It should be where OU is at fourth spot. They just have better wins, and their loss isn't to like UTEP or isn't to, you know, Southern Georgia or like McNeese State, like Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State played McNeese State this year, you know, and if OU had lost to McNeese State, yeah, put them where they are, put them outside of the rankings. But OU's one loss is to another Big 12 team that's been a quality opponent that's been ranked this season. It hasn't looked great, but that's OU's one loss. You know, Utah's one loss is to, at one point, a ranked USC, but Utah hasn't beaten anyone. OU has. And OU's beaten Texas, you know, on a neutral field. And OU's beaten Baylor at their place. OU's beaten Oklahoma State. OU's, you know, I can just keep going here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of my point here, at least.
So let me end up asking. If I might end up to us accent in the other ways is your persona, which I understand that. So you're obviously saying in your take on the record as of on this day of Tuesday, December 3rd of 2019, which in we're almost in the about 3 weeks into Christmas and Capital One Bowl Mania, bowl season pretty much won't start until close to January. So you're saying that it's on the record that Oklahoma should beat Baylor for the Big 12 championship and saying that they should be at the number four spot along with LSU, so along with Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson, which I also forgot Clemson is also playing against 22nd Virginia in the ACC championship game. I also forgot to mention them in the lineup. So that's six conference games that's being played on that Saturday, which I understand LSU and Georgia is playing in Atlanta that day before 4 o'clock Eastern time, which in I believe because right now the Heisman Trophy race is kind of tight right now. I kind of feel that Jalen Hurts is in the conversation. Then it's Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin. Then we got Joe Burrows out of LSU, which I'm going to say go Tigers in this equation, right? And LSU hasn't lost the game yet. LSU is in the enforcement battle tested in a lot of ways, which in their biggest win was against Alabama. Coming up there, the Brian Denny up and scoring 46 points on Alabama. So my question is to you is, and under that circumstances, do you think that Nick Saban should have never played Tua if he knew that he wasn't fully recovered from certain injuries from the time he played against LSU, even though it was a high score octane game, which LSU was coming up and coming in there A game ready, coming in there because it was a raw emotional source on us after losing to Alabama for 8 straight years. And my contention is right then and there. And if some people wanted to say, they said, everybody saying, yeah, Saban should have never played Tua. I've been saying, don't play Tua like that. If you have a plan against LSU, you could have him played your backup quarterback in Jones and everything else and all that other stuff, or you could have played his twin brother. But you threw them out there against LSU, then you also threw him out there when he played against South Carolina, when it was almost in the second, almost through the first half of the game, and he goes down on a dislocated hip surgery, he's out for the remainder of the year.
Against Mississippi State?
Tua went down against South Carolina.
Okay. I thought it was Mississippi State, but I guess I'm okay.
And he went down against South Carolina, even though they won that game in a blowout fashion, which I didn't watch the game that much longer. I knew it was a blowout from the time Tua went down in the first half, and I felt that Saban was playing this precautionary. He played this to the extreme, and everybody in the sand is, which now that, which I'm also bring up, which the next topic is the Iron Bowl game, which in the Iron Bowl game, that was even better than when they played years ago, when Auburn upset them in the last Iron Bowl game, into the Iron Bowl game that happened just this past weekend and everything else. Do you think that the dynasty of Alabama winning national championship is over with? Or you think it was time for them to take a step back for Alabama? Do you think it was that time for Alabama just to take a step backwards? Because it's like they say, you're not going to win all championships even if you are in the SEC. Do you think it was
time? I guess on that question, I don't think it's over. I don't think it's over by any means. I think that – I mean, you watch that Alabama – LSU game came down to the wire at the very end. If Tua plays out the rest of the season and somehow is rested and for the rest of that Mississippi State game, then plays the rest of the season and, you know, is fine in this Auburn game. And theoretically, let's say Alabama beats Auburn this weekend and Tua's still healthy. Then I think Alabama is probably the fourth seed, and they probably are the fourth seed over OU, Utah, Georgia, you know, insert X team there that, you know, that I think should be in there, but Alabama would probably be the fourth seed. It'd probably be really hard for the committee to go, listen, the only team these guys have lost to is the number one team in the nation. How are we going to not put them in the fourth spot? And at that point, I'm playing a bunch of what ifs here, and I understand, but let's say Tua is healthy the rest of the season and Alabama wins out and they're the fourth seed. Uh-huh. In this scenario, the dynasty is still intact. Alabama gets another chance to play in the college football playoffs again. And who knows if they're, you know, they didn't look that great against LSU defensively. They let them score 46 points. But you know what? LSU's defense also let Alabama in the game scoring 40-plus. So it's not like, in my mind, I think that, you know, Alabama was going to be out of it. And I think a healthy Tua makes that Alabama team way better. We saw the backup quarterback for Alabama against Auburn throw two pick sixes, you know, and also Auburn get a questionable field goal to end the first half. If neither of those three things happen, then I think Alabama wins, and all of a sudden we're all sitting here, you and me, going, well, maybe Alabama gets the fourth spot, right?
Right.
And then the dynasty is still intact. We're not even, you know, I don't see it. Because I've seen the question on ESPN too, and yeah, then we're not even. Then it's like, oh well, Alabama and Matt Jones. How is Matt Jones the backup quarterback, et cetera? And you know, what's his storyline? And is he going to be the Tua of this year that comes in at the end of the season, helps him out, kind of like Tua took over for Jalen in the national championship game. And I think we're talking about that if Alabama beats Auburn this past weekend instead of, oh, is the dynasty over? Just because in my mind, Alabama's going to keep recruiting great guys. They're going to keep recruiting great players. Nick Saban, as long as he wants to be head coach at Alabama, is going to have a really good football team. Right. Whether it's going to be extremely good is hard to tell. But Alabama has lost six games since 2016. Just six. That's it. And that's in 4 years.
Games. That's the six games. And if you end up thought about this, because the last time Nick Saban ended up lost that many games like that, when he became the head coach for Alabama back in 2007, when Alabama went 7-6. That was the most losses that he ever had when it was his first year as a head coach for Alabama. And ever since then, he's been majority as far as the winningest head coach in college football history and everything else in that particular standards. Now, I don't know if he would top more wins like that against Urban Myers like that, because last time I checked, Urban Myers and the Tours had the winningest season by far, 98% of his games, in that majority of his winning percentage. So if you do that by going as legendary coaches who have the most winning percentages, I will put Urban Myers, then Nick Saban, along in that category. And then Dabo Swinney goes right then as the third winningest coach, along with Ed Orgeron, which Ed Orgeron is ended up doing an exceptional job and everything else for as far as him being the head coach from LSU, from a person who could have had a head coaching job at any college university that could have took him in at that time, but nobody didn't end up them all taking for that consideration in a lot of ways and in that particular standards. So in my contention is what you're saying is and everything else, I agree with everything that you end up saying at some point right then and there. But there's a certain point in annuity that Nick Saban should have played it safe. And the real reason he should have ended up playing it safe, that he should have placed Matt Jones in there from the time to knowing that he was limping on that ankle like that against LSU. And that was the thing that ended up kind of tricked me off from that. And what I found out from breaking news is, which I'm going to stop this topic right then and there, because the topic is really good on this actual night here, on this actual evening on the RLJ Brock Show right then and there, from that point right then and there, which we talking to Calvin Glenn Alexander on this evening here, on this actual day on Tuesday, which is early in the week, which we're only 3 weeks away from Christmas, and we about no less than a month away from Capital One Bowl Mania, which we're going to have all these bowl games and everything else, from the Rose Bowl, from the Peach Bowl game to the Sugar Bowls, et cetera, down the way and everything else. So I wanted to end up jump back in the NFL right quick, found out today that from breaking news early today that Ron Rivera was fired from the Carolina Panthers, which is according to David Tapir, who was the owner for the Carolina Panthers and everything else, switching. They had to make some coach switches and everything else from that. After 9 years, Ron Rivera was ended up fired just today after Carolina ended up had that embarrassing loss to a two-win team of the Washington Redskins in the 29-21 loss. And the honesty of saying this is that if I feel that they said that if Ron Rivera was end up was going to be fired from the Carolina Panthers, I believe the simple fact, I think Cam Newton is going to be the next one that's going to be gone because, for one, Cam Newton hasn't ended up being himself. I would say, and I'm going to take this back 4 years ago, Cam Newton hasn't ended up being the same since they went to Super Bowl 50 and they lost that game to the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, which Peyton Manning was retiring after that season, which they lost that game 24-10 in Super Bowl 50 right then and there. At that time, I think Von Miller was the MVP of that Super Bowl game right then and there. And I said that because of it. And I felt that from the time that ever since Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers lost that Super Bowl, Carolina, there was a point in time Carolina was winning games throughout the process of the season to everything else, to the expectations. I'm thinking Carolina was going to stay at the top of us in the NFC South along with my Saints at the time being, which are my Saints and the 49ers got to play this Sunday for home field advantage to determine who gets home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Who will be that team that's going to be right behind the Seattle Seahawks, which we're going to bring up, who's what's in the seedings from the AFC and the NFC side of things there. So what was your reaction to where when the time was up for Ron Rivera and everything else? And where do you think the Carolina Panthers' plans should go at once he was fired? Do you think Carolina's time in Do you think Cam Newton's time in Carolina is automatically over?
So I don't think Ron Rivera should have gotten fired like he did. I think that they should have waited till the end of the season at least, because you've got a backup quarterback, like you mentioned. But I do think his time was about done. I mean, that you look at the head coach when things start going wrong, and the team's lost four games in a row now. You know, one you mentioned to the Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
And you've got arguably the best running back in the league on your team, maybe the best playmaker, if that's a possibility.
Yeah,
you know, you've got like an MVP candidate in CMC, Christian McCaffrey. And he loses four straight games in a row. That's gotta fall on the head coach. I'm one of those guys where I would always say, like, what makes a difference in a midseason change, you know, especially in pro sports. Carolina knows that, okay, they fire their head coach, then a new head coach comes in. Are they going to rack enough wins to, you know, to go to the Super Bowl and go to the playoffs? No, it's this late in the season. So just let Rivera, you know, at least coach through the rest of the season, be known as a team that respects their coaches. And, you know, in the future, I think it helps you recruit and attract coaches when you're not the, you know, when you're not the greatest franchise in the entire world. You know, they're not the Cowboys. They're not the Niners. They're not the, you know, the Saints or whoever. They're not like NFL royalty in Carolina. So it me, at least I play that mental game of, you know what, I'm going to keep the coach the rest of the season, then let him go. It was definitely his time in my view. But it's also, you know, Rivera's playing without his, you know, without the starting quarterback, the guy you put a lot, you know, paid a lot of money to and hasn't been healthy in a while. And I don't think that falls on Rivera, at least completely. And that's why I wanted to fire him during the season. But you do got to look, and hey, four straight losses, especially the last one to the Redskins, you know, it was inexcusable. So you got to make a change. I just would have done at the end of the season. And to your point, I think Cam Newton is not on the Panthers next year.
If you end up, like, I'll tell you like this here, because right now I think the Carolina Panthers end up have a difficulty decision to end up to make on rather they should end up keep Cam And at that time being, you got to pay Cam Newton somewhere a huge, hefty amount of $21.1 million, which, and that is a huge, hefty kind of money right then and there if you end up keep him on that roster. And then on top of all that, that's going to kind of push you back from the cap space and everything else there. That's going to kind of put you down on a derailment. And if you release Cam Newton, that's a $2 million difference right then and there. You could up and pay Cam Newton to 21.1, or you could get rid of him. You save $19.1 million in your cap space
Now,
for
do you think
next
they're,
season.
when you say that, do you think they're going to cut him or do you think they would trade him?
I think they might cut him.
Okay.
I believe that the Carolina Panthers is end up is going to cut Cam Newton because Cam Newton hasn't been himself since he won a national championship with Auburn years ago at that time in that sense of matter. Because just like Cam Newton hasn't even been back on the field since week two this year. He only played two games, and then after that, he's been out ever since. He's been out for over that amount, for whichever that reason. Because he had that lisophrenic foot injury, which he had to see like four foot specialists to determine why he hasn't ended up recovering from that foot injury. I mean, he didn't have surgery. He has a rehab tools on that foot of his and everything else. I feel that I'm saying, do everybody end up think that Cameron should end up be frustrated right now? Yes, he have every single bit of sense for him to end up to be that frustrated because he hasn't ended up been that pretty much that productive because of it. I mean, for 1 minute, you went seeing from the Carolina Panthers was second in the NFC South along with the Saints at the time, which in the Saints just won the division on Thanksgiving night against the Atlanta Falcons in that particular standards right then and there. They went from winning, it was like 4 or 5 games in a row, and then now we end up having a discussion and end up to say that they just lost four in a row since Kyle Allen was the quarterback, since taking in his replacement. And at that time of that clutch right then and there, if you realize, and this might make sense to you right then and there, which is, I understand Kyle Allen was end up was getting his feet wet at some point, at some time, but there's a certain point of time that he was going to get derailed. And I am upset that the Carolina Panthers was going to get derailed after you win a lot of games. You win a lot of games, and there are point of times you're going to derail and fall right in the middle of the year, right then and there. And that's not a good look on a certain team that was trying to make a comeback like that last year. Next thing you know, last year, they lost like five, six, seven, eight in a row. You lost that many games. Now you're on the verge about to end up to have back-to-back losing seasons after you continuously won five or six games, which is, that's not a good look for no team. And pretty much right then and there, as you said this, as you said this to me right now, Calvin, I believe that the Carolina Panthers is end up is going to cut Cam Newton for them to end up to save money. Because if you keep him now, you're going to be broke. You're going to be broke and you end up giving this man that kind of money. And how are you going to end up be able to reliable make him as a reliable franchise QB, which you say he's the face of your franchise, but at the same time, there's a point that you're going to cut him. And how you end up make substantial sense to regulate everything else. How that's going to happen, I have no idea. And now that y'all then let the New Orleans Saints then went over 5 games ahead of you in the NFC South division, which in the NFC South, which in the Saints then dominated the NFC South 3 consecutive years now. Now that the New Orleans Saints is the number one seed as of for right now to determine if they can beat San Francisco Sunday. And if they do, that's a little bit more of a cushion for the Saints to end up to win those final 4 games. Because I thought if you look at the Saints' schedule to San Francisco's schedule down the way right then and there, Because the final four, here's the final four games that the New Orleans Saints end up have. You got San Francisco, you have the Indianapolis Colts, you have the Tennessee Titans, and you got the Carolina Panthers at the end of the year. There's a good possible way that the New Orleans Saints can contentiously end up and win those final four games. I believe San Francisco is the toughest one for them to end up to get by. It's not going to be simple, and it's not going to be easy for them. I believe that my team could contentiously could pull it. It's just going to be that physical battle. If San Fran could bring the physical battle to all teams that they played against, and they can be, we got to bring it and keep that same energy levels. There's levels into this football game and how serious this is as a playoff contender. So the next topic I wanted to end up bring up to you is, Mr. Alexander, is from 1 to 6 in the seedings, is that who you think is your number one? Who is your one, your two, three, fourth, fifth, and sixth seed in the AFC? I will let you start on that one, then I will jump in after.
Okay, so number one, I mean, I'm gonna go the Ravens. It's hard for me to say any team but the Ravens. Number one, number two, and until I'm proven wrong, until they lose, until they don't get back to the Super Bowl, until they don't, have six rings on, Tom Brady's fingers, etc. I'm gonna go number two, and it's kind of hard right now because they're not looking the greatest offensively, but defense they look fine. I know the Deshaun Watson tore him up, but still, I'm gonna go number two, the Patriots. I'm gonna
Okay.
go number three, your Saints. Excuse me,
Well,
no, not the Saints. Saints are NFC. Excuse me.
that's right.
I'm gonna go
That's
number
fine, though.
three. I'm gonna go number three, Deshaun Watson, Houston Texans,
Oh.
and then, and then I guess it becomes tough. I'm blanking a little bit on divisions here, but I believe. Number four, I'm going to go the Kansas City Chiefs. That's right, for the West. And
Oh.
then just because I haven't seen Mahomes play a ton of games healthy, and I mean, the AFC still is stacked this year. It's just incredibly
Yeah,
good.
the AFC is contentiously stacked between Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. And just to be out, and just to be the throw, and just to throw the there a thought right then and there for you, those two losses that the New England Patriots end up have has lost to those two between Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson.
Right.
That's the only
So,
two losses between them two.
yeah. So the Patriots' two losses are really,
Look brutal.
their wins aren't against the greatest teams in the entire world, but their two losses, I mean, they're against Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson. It's hard to argue against the Patriots for losing to those, especially in the regular season when, kind of the back of your mind, you always know the Patriots really turn it on in the playoffs, and show a different side of them. So that's my top four at least. For fifth and sixth, it becomes tougher in my mind because, I mean, the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders, I don't have trust in a lot of those teams. The AFC, the NFC, the AFC East, excuse me. I mean, you're talking the Jets, the Bills, and the, Dolphins. I
Well,
guess I'm going to take the Bills because it's hard for me to. I don't trust the. I mean, I guess I'm going to take the Bills as the fifth seed because they looked really good beating my Dallas Cowboys. Really good. And the Dallas Cowboys looked really, really bad in that game, especially when everyone knew it was going to be on prime time. Everyone knew it was going to be on Thanksgiving, the whole thing with the Cowboys.
I was
And the
going to
Bills
ask
showed
you
them
that
up.
one.
The Bills showed them up in Dallas.
I was going to ask you that part, right? I was going to ask you, how did you feel towards about on that day of Thanksgiving? Which I could tell you, Thanksgiving was kind of withdrawn from the way how the Cowboys end up gave up 26 unanswered. They allowed the Buffalo Bills to get 26 unanswered points in the second half. There's no way you should never give up 26 unanswered like this, and you're down 26-7. On Thanksgiving Day, I feel like this, and I'm gonna say it like this, and I'm gonna say this for your savior and everything else. Which is, I don't got nothing against the owner, I don't have nothing against the son, though, I don't have nothing against the Joneses ever. My thing is for y'all is I believe that y'all need to end up getting rid of Jason Garrett, just play him out to the rest of the year, and then the next thing you know, boom, get rid of this man. Because if you keep him there any much longer, you're going to have a down derailing season each time. And here's why I said that. I'm saying this because this is facts and where I'm seeing it. I have coworkers of mine who are Cowboy fans. And the way that the division is on y'all side of things is it's kind of tight knit between y'all and the Philadelphia Eagles. Every time that y'all lose a game, y'all leave the door wide open to Philadelphia. But Philadelphia can't even close the deal and can't even go on top of this right then and there. And they go down losing to the Miami Dolphins, giving up 37 points. I understand Philadelphia had 31, but you ain't had no business giving up 37 to a horrendous Miami Dolphins team that's in the same division as the Patriots. There's no way in the world you should never, ever give that away. There's no cause of sincerity of that. I feel that the way how that division is, I believe that your team still have a legitimate shot to end up to win that division because of the Cowboys won the division games. And the Cowboys never lost yet. Any thoughts on that one?
I mean, the Eagles, every single thing I hear, the Eagles have the easiest schedule to round out the season. And the Cowboys have one of the hardest. So in the back of my mind as a Cowboys fan, I'm trying not to get my hopes up. But I also know the Cowboys beat the Dolphins earlier in the season pretty easily and didn't allow them to score more than 15. Whereas the Eagles, you know, I know they've got some injuries right now, but the Eagles just allowed the Dolphins to score 39. That cannot be just swept under the rug. As a Cowboys fan myself, I was feeling bad about the Dallas Cowboys versus the New England Patriots loss, but it wasn't as bad as I felt to get, you know, about some other teams. Just because it's a 4-point loss where there were a lot of bad play calls, there were a lot of bad flags. It's rainy, it's wet, and the Dallas Cowboys have proven over the past weeks they are a throwing football team to win. And they couldn't do it against New England. So I was feeling, okay, this isn't the worst loss of our season against this good Patriots team, et cetera. Then all of a sudden you lose like you do to the Bills on primetime, and it makes me question the rest of the season. I mean, we got the Bears this Thursday on Thursday Night Football at the Bears. It's going to be cold. It's going to be outdoors. You know, the Dallas Cowboys, of course, play in Jerry World, which is a dome stadium in Texas. And I just don't feel great about even though the Bears aren't good and they're 6-6 and the Cowboys are 6-6, I still don't feel great about that game. And I don't feel great about the rest of the season as a Cowboys fan, just because the teams we've beaten teams that we should beat, and we've lost to teams that are good, and we haven't done much to prove that we're good. So in the back of my mind, I'm going to keep going. I don't know. I think this could be a deal where the Cowboys end up in the playoffs at 8-8, you know, winning the division. I mean, I really do think the Cowboys could enter the playoffs with only two more wins the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Maybe one if the Eagles still look like they did against the Dolphins. You know, I know the Dolphins threw a couple of trick plays, but the Dolphins, I mean, 39 points. You allow the Dolphins to score 39 on you. That's the most they've scored in the whole season at any point this season. I know the Eagles have injuries, but 39 is 39. It's hard to get away from that number in my mind. And I feel like the Dallas Cowboys could win, you know, the NFC East with 7 or 8 wins. I just, the division's not good at all. The Giants are officially eliminated. The Redskins have been for a while. And the Cowboys and Eagles just, you know, it's whoever, you know, can lose the light, you know, can win the more games, of course, but who, you know, can kind of walk into the playoffs or back into it. They're not, you know, it would be hard for me to see the Dallas Cowboys winning 4 straight to end the season and be 10-6. It just doesn't seem possible.
So I'm going to say it like this here for you, Calvin, and everything else, because I can tell you right now, I've been through, my team's been through losing adversities like this, because I don't know if I told you this right there. There was a point of time, and I'm going to tell you like this, and I used to work at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome back around since 2015. I worked there 2 years ago, and there was a point of time that my Saints at the time had 3-7-9 seasons, There was a point in time that Sean Payton could have been gone after those three 7-9 seasons in 3 years and everything else, which I understand there was a point. This was not Drew Brees' fault. He doesn't play defense. His job was to end up to play offense and everything else, which this man has slung over between 4,000 and 4,500 yards throughout each time of the consecutive seasons. And he had over 30-something touchdowns. He had over at least about that many amount of touchdowns in that time. His highest amount of interceptions that he had was 33 interceptions in that course of his career. But that was not his fault. He doesn't play defense. We had a horrendous defense. We had a good, outstanding offense, which our offense was always was ranked top 5 to top 10 in that in the rankings of the National Football League and all that other stuff, which I understand the Saints and the Cowboys. We both end up had our matchup in that game, whichever week that was, which and it was this year, from the advantage of last Thanksgiving year. So, in that time, which and I'm gonna end up saying that was a good game between us and everything else, which we showed truths to that, even though it was a low scoring game, it was a battle of who had the better defense during that game. But for me to end up to tell you this, your team will not make it if Jason Garrett cannot end up making certain play calls. Because all he going to keep doing is telling Dak, throw the ball downfield. There was a point in time, y'all had this good as well. Y'all should have ended up in having Ezekiel Elliott running that ball like that. Because in the first half, this man had about almost 10 carries, 58 yards. Second half, he had 78 yards. That's 20 yards he had. I think he had like 5 carries, 20 yards. He had the game about 16 carries for 78 yards. There was a point of time when there was a when the game was on the hitches and everything else, when there was a point, there was a fourth down and one. There was a point Jason Garrett was making boneheaded plays that he have no business setting up doing this. And I'm in the tour saying this because I understand you have sensitiveness when it comes to playing like this. And then on top of all that, Calvin, and I'm not trying to throw no salt in the wound and everything else. Y'all done lost to y'all is contentiously 0-5 to teams that have winning records. And those five teams is Saints, Green Bay, Minnesota, New England, now Buffalo. That is five straight losses to teams that have winning records. Five teams that have winning records? There's no way in hell in the atrociousness. Y'all should have never had no five losses to teams that have winning records. That's a bad reputation look right there.
But I mean, but why not? All five of those teams that you mentioned are going to go to the playoffs. And I know Minnesota and Green Bay play in the same division. I know the Bills and the Patriots do as well. But you know what? One of those two teams can be the wild card in each division. And I understand the Cowboys should be better, but all five of those teams are good. It's not like those five. If we had lost to the Dolphins, I'd be going, man, we suck. If we had lost to the Bengals, the Steelers, even who are 8-5 this year, et cetera,
It
then
was
I'd be
worse
like,
enough y'all lost to the Jets, which y'all didn't have no business losing to no Jets that did not even add a win. That was embarrassing.
So
I felt that,
the Jets
okay,
got us for sure.
Dallas lost
The
one game.
Jets.
I felt that they was gonna bounce. I felt that y'all was gonna bounce back beating the Jets right there. I didn't think Sam Darnold with the Edwards was gonna put up lights out numbers against y'all and put over 330 something yards against a Cowboys defense who was number three in the defense. Even though I did say your secondary sometimes could be a suspect, but your linebackers and everything else and your D lines, y'all is automatically set right then and there. I feel like y'all could be set up to be in a good matchup to San Francisco if you make the postseason, because really, what I found out is if you win majority of your division games, you could automatically be mathematically be in the playoffs no matter what your overall record is. If you win majority of your divisions. Right now, y'all 3-0 in y'all division right now. You haven't lost a division game just yet. Your division games is going to come down to Philadelphia and the Washington Redskins. Because you did beat Washington early in the year. You beat Washington early in the year.
Yep.
You beat them early in the year. There's a possible chance you could go undefeated in your division right then and there. So, like, I'm going to tell you this right now. Between okay. this game and that game next weekend against the Rams, it's a make or break in those two games. You could win those two games, make the playoffs and go with 10-6, or you could go down and derail and go 6-10. That's a make or break for y'all.
Well, I don't think we're losing every game to end the season. That's not that's
well,
not
I bad. Doubt it not. I contentiously doubt it not that y'all not gonna lose y'all games. I'm just saying.
We'll beat the I'm Giants tell you like or the this. Redskins. Yeah, it or should both. Be no matter
there
what.
There should be season. No way. There shouldn't be no way y'all should lose to the Bears. I understand that's not a good feeling. I understand that's not a good feeling towards on your end. I can say that the same way too. Because you're playing against another quarterback who had the worst QBR rating, pass yards attempts, and passer rating right behind Tom Brady. There is no way y'all should lose to Chicago in Soldier Field. If my Saints can end up beat, if my team end up beats Chicago in Soldier Field with a backup quarterback named Teddy Bridgewater, who went 5-0 as a backup QB to Drew Brees before he made his comeback, there's a way y'all should beat them. Because Trubisky, he is never going to live up to his expectations. I can tell you that right now. As many times we didn't beat Chicago, there's no way he should not play y'all. He should not play Dak. Your running backs is going to be kind of pretty much going to be a tie if Zeke can get past 100 yards right then and there. You got good, decent receivers in Cooper and Cobb and Gallup and Tavon Austin. Y'all should automatically shred the Chicago Bears by any means necessary. Y'all should have a field day against Chicago. I'm just saying this right then and there. Y'all should balance things out. That's what Jason Garrett should have learned to do in the last game. He didn't balance things out. He just want Dak just to throw, and throw even more than that without balancing the pass and the run. As much as Jason, as much as Jerry Jones gets disgusted and gets pissed off, every Cowboy fan should be disgusted with Jason Garrett. I can tell y'all right now, y'all want this man to be gone. Because if he doesn't be gone, he's going to be a cancer. He's going to be a cancer that he's going to be standing in your organization. And you want to know who ain't going to let him go? Mr. Jerry Jones is not going to tolerate to let him go because he's going to say he is the man for the job. He's willing to will to win. How are you going to be man and willing to win football games? I'm not saying this to hurt your feelings, Calvin, but this is the honesty of truths of everything else. This is truths to a football game.
You haven't even asked me if I think Jason Garrett should go or not. So he's yes. going to hurt my feelings. I mean, I think Jason Garrett's now the longest tenured head coach under Jerry Jones, and the Cowboys have, I believe, one playoff win to show for it. So if that's
yeah,
me,
two playoff appearances. Well, let me see.
Three. It's at least well,
yeah, three playoff appearances. He has three playoff appearances, two playoff victories. Within that many years? Within a quarter of a decade, two victories, and then that time, of course.
Wait,
I believe
you say in a quarter
I believe
of a decade?
Marvin Lewis is worse than Jason Garrett. Marvin Lewis went 14 years without a playoff victory when he was in Cincinnati. 14 years. He could not get a playoff victory in those 14 years.
Okay.
14 years? But Jason Garrett, 3 playoff appearances, 2 playoff victories. 2 playoff victories? In how many years you with the Cowboys organization, when before you was a head coach, you was an offensive coordinator? You had the Cowboys looking good when you was an offensive coordinator. Now you didn't give that all the way to Kellen Moore, who doesn't even know half of the playbook.
Do you know that for sure? Quarterback.
He was a quarterback.
Did you know Kellen Moore doesn't know even half the playbook?
Yes, I know he doesn't know half of the playbook. He really don't.
How do you,
he didn't even play that much of a football game.
He's making the playbook. Come on, man. He's making the playbook. He's offensive coordinator.
He's making them, but why why is everybody in there thinking Jason Garrett is in there making those calls? There was a point in time Jason Garrett could allow him to trust this man. This man played in the NFL. Played in the college collegiate level, played in the high school level. Why you
both
can't
them did. Both the head coach the at that? Both Jason Garrett and Kellen Moore both played NFL football, both played high school football, both played collegiate football. I mean, are you saying that the play calling should rely and should basically only be put on the offensive coordinator, that the head coach never makes an offensive play call?
I mean, he can. There's a point of communication. There's a point of communication into that. There's a point of communication between the coach and the offensive coordinator. That's supposed to be communication. That's supposed to be your 50-50 ball right there. You got to determine, should they do this run play or they should do this pass play? Or should they do this pass play or this run play? That's supposed to be your 50-50 ball. That's your bread and butter right there. I feel that the communication between Garrett and Moore is not set. I felt that they could have had this set communication longer. But they're not there with it. I'm not saying this to end up to torture your team right then and there. I'm just saying that they should have learned to have a heart-to-heart conversation how they should end up running plays. I felt that Dak Prescott should be the middleman. You're the quarterback of this team, Garrett, and Moore that's calling these plays. You should be having like a conversation like Sean Payton and Drew Brees. How do you think Sean Payton and Drew Brees end up becoming a combined of a quarterback and head coach? How do you think these two end up run plays? They know how to initiate plays before the games or the night of the games. When was the last time Garrett and Dak Prescott ever did this? I've never seen them done this, never. In majority of the time when Dak Prescott came in the league 3 years ago. Never. And as much as I end up watching football, which I understand you got more of the experience than me, I'm just in the tools watched it for what my eye test goes. I feel that there's a point when you end up having a turmoil in that obligation to the situations and the sacrifices that you put in each and every single daytime and every single night. There's a point in time that a quarterback and a head coach should initiate which plays that they should run both the night of the game or the day of the game.
That's well, are you telling me you don't think Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett and Kellen Moore, you don't think they communicate about the offensive play calls and what they want to see and what the game focus should be every week? Mm. Do you not think that happens at all? I mean, I understand Sean Payton and Drew Brees have a lot more chemistry, but Drew Brees is in a different stratosphere as far as being a football player and a quarterback than Dak Prescott. I'm not even going to compare those guys. Drew Brees is incredible.
I wouldn't put him that. I will say it like this. I would give Dak Prescott at least another 5-10 years before he's in an elite QB. He's there. He's not all the way to the legendary number yet. He's just not up there. He got good long ways to go. I don't have nothing against Dak Prescott. This is a dude that came all the way from, he came from Mississippi State. Could have got playing, he could have went to LSU, but LSU didn't take him. We regretted that situation, which is fair. He came from Mississippi State, chose to go to Dallas. He was just an underdog. Everybody underestimated him when they end up saying, oh, Dak Prescott was too short. He doesn't know how to make certain play calls this way and that. What my obligation is, and I'm going to say this is not even Dak Prescott's fault. This is what I don't blame him. I feel that Jason Garrett is shoving Dak Prescott away from making certain calls when they have it comes to the conversation. I feel that Jason Garrett is shoving him away. It's not Kellen Moore. It's not him. It's not Prescott. It's Garrett that's trying to think he can make certain initiatives. You can't make certain initiatives if you have to see if your quarterback and your offensive coordinator can fit right down with you. You got to see if it's going to be an agreement or a disagreement. That's the last thing I end up wanting to say. And that is one thing I've been wanting to say this to you for the longest, but I understand both of us end up having busy schedules. It's not our fault. We just haven't made the time for it and everything else. And this is one hell of a good conversation here. I understand we have our agreements and disagreements, but this one makes it a good show right now. This is really makes it really good here and all that other stuff right then and there. But my thing is for you is if your team is going to make it out of this regular season, win the rest of your games. Because I believe y'all should have like some good, easy majority games. Like you got Chicago and you got the LA Rams, which in the LA Rams are not even the same team at that point of the course of everything else, which I noticed, you noticed. You forgot. We had the conversation earlier when Lamar Jackson ended up destroying the LA Rams when it was 45-6. They hasn't even been the same. So these two games that y'all have should be very, very winnable. This is, should be very winnable between those two games, between the Bears and the Rams. These two games are very winnable. There should be no excuses. I just feel that Zeke needs to be involved more. This man ain't signed $90 million. And $50 million in contract loans. I feel that he didn't sign his contract for no reason. He going to feel like he's going to get more frustrated by the time being if you don't feed him the ball enough. I mean, the carries is there, and I feel that his yards of running after contact is not up there because last time I checked, Ezekiel Elliott was averaging like 2.5 yards a carry. 2.5 yards a carry. I'm trying to figure this out for you, but you're more of a fan of this than I am. And that is the thing that I could contentiously end up saying. It's just my opinion. It's only in my opinion for what I can end up to think up here. I only use my originality. You use your originality, which you just used it on me right then and there, which is kind of good. It's good that it's up there. It just, there's a lot of frustrations and the intensity for y'all as Cowboys fans. And within my point in case is if your Cowboys is going to make it, I believe there's a shot chances that y'all might be a number 5 seed team. Y'all might be a 5th seed team. Probably could be going against either Minnesota or Green Bay. It could be Minnesota. It could be Green Bay. It could be Minnesota, or it might be San Francisco. Because we fought San Francisco, that's going to be a tough battle. That's going to be a tough battle if San Francisco comes here. And that's not going to be an easy game to go by because San Francisco do got that front seven. And that front seven could destroy Dak Prescott from even throwing the ball. The only way I think y'all would have won that game against San Francisco, if y'all ever played them, play the running game against them. That's your only option out. And it's just like I told you like this early in the point of the show. Jimmy Garoppolo, which they call him point star Jimmy, Jimmy Garoppolo is a question mark. He is a question mark when it comes to throwing the ball.
He is. Now, Earl, I want to ask you a question here before we go.
Uh-huh.
And I want to go back to college football here for a second. As you know, and as I've said before tonight on the podcast and everywhere, I'm a big Oklahoma State fan. I went to Oklahoma State. I've worked for them for a while, you know, when I was there. And everything like that. I've got deep ties to Oklahoma State. So I'm asking you, as an outside person who's from, you know, from New Orleans and,
yep, you know, on a ray.
More, yeah, everything like that. You mentioned earlier the Heisman Trophy, you know, race and that type of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Tell me why Chuba Hubbard, the Oklahoma State running back, who's got 1,900 plus rushing yards on the season, 200 more than Jonathan Taylor. Tell me why he shouldn't at least just be in the discussion, or at least just make it to New York. I'm not saying he should win the Heisman Trophy, but tell me why he shouldn't be in New York, shouldn't be in consideration for the Heisman Trophy this year. I'm not saying he should win. I'm not going that far. I understand Oklahoma State's not that great this year. You know, we've lost games we shouldn't have, et cetera, et cetera. But tell me why the nation's leading rusher and the guy who's winning it, who's got the most rushing yards by far, and is now number two on the all-time rushing list at Oklahoma State, so he passed Thurman Thomas and is only behind Barry Sanders. Tell me why you shouldn't be in Heisman Trophy, at least discussion.
Oh, and what is this kid's name is? I might have never heard of him.
So that's part of my issue is that, you know, is that you're an avid sports fan, you haven't even heard of the guy. That's not your fault. That's just ESPN not airing enough of him or whoever, you know, Bleacher Report or, you know, however you get your information. Right. But his name is Chuba Hubbard. This is his one big season that he's going to have. I assume he's going to go pro next year because, I mean, this could be his best rushing year ever at Oklahoma State. And if it's not, I'd be shocked. I mean, if he came back next year, I'd be shocked. He's a redshirt sophomore. He has every reason in the entire world to go pro after this year.
Okay.
Especially while everything's gone. You know, it's unlikely Oklahoma State, you know, goes to the national championship or does anything crazy next year or anything like that. So tell me why he doesn't deserve at least some credit as far as, you know, in the Heisman Trophy
to
race.
Be honest, well, to be honest, which I never heard of this kid's name like this, and I ain't never thought that this way. I think, and I'm going to say this might be only because of the committees. I think this is from the Heisman committee's standpoint. I feel that the real reason that they didn't put him in this because they probably figured from the strength of their scheduling was not up there because they felt that Oklahoma State hasn't played nobody physical. I think that this is just from the own Heisman. This is just from the Heisman committees. This is from the Heisman committees. This ain't my opinion. I believe that Tuba Hubbard has not. I mean, he's up there and everything else. I felt that they should place him up there because right then and there, there's a lot of Heisman people that falls in that category. There's Jalen Hurst, Jonathan Taylor, who else falls in that? Joe Burrow from LSU. I believe Tua Hubbard should fall in that category. Why they haven't brought him up enough? I don't understand these people. I feel that ESPN should end up towards being embarrassed from how the regularities and the circumstances that they should have brought this kid up. And if I would have learned all this long ago in that particular standards, I believe this kid is very outstanding. I believe that and everything else. And that is the thing, and that's in my opinion right then and there. And before we even end this episode and this show right then and there and everything else, though, which in I would put my I will put my 2 cents in, and I will end up make this real quick for you because I know you have a lot of things to do the very next day, and so does myself. So my topics towards was my own thing is for the AFC and the NFC side, I'm gonna make this real quick. I'm gonna say Baltimore, Houston. My third team will be Kansas City. Buffalo's at four. Pittsburgh is at five. And who is my number six? Who will be my number 16? Damn, somebody got to be at my number 16 team.
The Bills?
I think Colts? I believe I'm going to have to put the Indianapolis Colts as my number 16. That's the 16. I will put them at number six right now. I will put them right up there in that equation if they be out of the playoff hunt right then and there. NFC side, Saints, Seahawks, San Fran, Green Bay, Vikings, and your Cowboys at number six. That's gotcha, how I'm putting gotcha. It. I'm putting your team. The real reason I'm putting your team right at number six of it because three teams is in the hunt right now between Philadelphia, Carolina, and somebody else. I can't think of. I would have put Chicago in there, but the way our Chicago is playing right now, they're not playing to excel the expectations. That's my last thing I'm going to end up going to say right then and there. So, and it's like they said, and I'm going to end up asking this one before we really leave. This is home field advantage on the line between this is the game of the year. I'm not going to call this the game of the week. I'm calling this one the game of the year. Who wins Sunday between the Niners and the Saints? Who wins this? And they said San Francisco is 3.5-point underdogs against the Saints. Who wins and why this team deserve home field? And that's the closing topic.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, Earl, I think you're going to like my answer because I know you're a Saints fan. I think the Saints win. Like I said before, you know, when we started out the podcast, 49ers haven't played anyone. And the two teams they have played that have been good, they've lost to. So I think that the Niners' defense is incredible, is really good. But Drew Brees is also incredible, just like Lamar Jackson's incredible, just like Russell Wilson's incredible. And Drew Brees is on that level. He's on the level with those guys. He's in that tier. He may not be having that year this season that Wilson and Jackson are, but he's in that tier. And because of that, he's going to be able to beat the 49ers and beat their defense. And ultimately, I think the Saints defense is pretty good. I don't know what happened in that Atlanta Falcons game. I think you guys were just looking ahead to the next week or something. Uh-huh. And I'm going to let that one just completely go under the rug. Just like, you know, I mean, every team has like that game, you know, every team has that, like, hey, we're just looking to next week or whatever it is. We just have that like lapse in however it happens. I mean, the Bengals won a game this season, you know, so anything can really happen. I'm going to let that Falcons game go. But I think that, and the reason why is because I think the Saints have a really, really good head coach, really, really good, really good quarterback, an amazing number one. I mean, I'm saying he's best in the league, wide receiver Michael Thomas. And the Saints ultimately are going to win this game against the Niners.
Wow. Well, that's a thoughtful and a toss answer right then and there. Well, it's been a fun one right then and there. Right then and there with my boy, Mr. Calvin, Glenn Alexander, right here and there. If you ever want to talk to this man about anything about the NFL, the NBA, college football, and everything else, even professional golf and everything else in that particular standards, go on his anchor app called the CGA Tour. Look for this man on there on the anchor app. And if you got any inbox questions that you end up want to ask him, follow this man on Instagram. His name is Calvin Glenn Alexander. He will have certain answers, and he will tell you the acknowledge and the truth on anything that you end up need to know on everything to that knowledge. and it will get you to your originality. Mr. Calvin Glenn Alexander, thank you to Endotors joining the show and everything else. Do you have any final message thoughts that you want to end up give to the Anchor community and the fans that they want to know? Wait, you're breaking up, sir.
Yeah, I'm a big Oklahoma State fan, big Oklahoma City Thunder fan, Oklahoma sports fan. Weirdly, I'm also a San Diego Padres fan and Dallas Cowboys fan. So if you're ever trying to talk some sports or hear about my opinions, please hit me up. And Earl, thanks again so much for having me on.
Yes, well, thank you so much, sir. We should end up talk very, very soon about what happens to us in the championship games that we end up should proceed right then and there. So should we end up to us hit up again somewhere around, so I said, by at least in about the next couple of weeks?
Next couple weeks, for sure, we'll have to talk about these, the playoffs for college football, the four teams, yeah, and how they actually all line up. We'll have to talk about that for sure. Talk about the New Year's Six Bowls when those come out as well. See who's all playing in those. See how if Alabama actually is left out of the college football playoffs and the New Year's Six Bowls. Seems kind of crazy, but they're ranked 12th right now, so it could happen. And we'll have to catch up then for sure.
Yes, sir. And we also got to catch up the next time about the XF, the Extreme Football League, that's coming up somewhere in February, which I understand that's going to be kind of tough, and that's going to be new to bring that up. But we should end up have this up there with you. I should end up towards hearing from you within the next couple of weeks, which I should be your next guest on your show when you end up towards have the actual time.
Oh, yeah, Earl. Yeah, for sure. You'll guy you on as a guest on mine as well. Earl, thanks so much for having me on, and I'll talk with you soon.
Yes, sir. I should hear from you in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks so much, Earl.
Thank you.